Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 89 of season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hello, yeah, it's good to be back. Got more, 2 more minutes left. Let's do this.
2 more minutes left this week. You know, I still have a few more weeks to go.
For me,
yeah. I still have another 34 episodes after this one, so after this week. So, yeah, we're not done yet.
Films, yeah.
That's all right. We're not done. Hey, come on. It's not as long as The Great Escape. That one, I have a feeling that I will not be surpassing that one in the near future, at least. If probably never. I think 172 will remain, you know, my record. So, you know, when I have a movie like this one, there's 124 minutes, it's not as bad. No, so, not that was bad. Not that the 172 was bad. You know, it was a lot of fun. But, yeah. So minute 89 begins with John realizing that he has made a mistake and then ends with Grant getting ready to shoot. So yesterday we ended things with Grant getting Carmine hustled away to go steal off the street. And then John turns to him and goes, "Guess I was." And it continues today. He says, "Guess I was wrong about you. You're not such an ass after all." And I love Grant's response. He goes, "No, you're right. I'm just your kind of ass." Do you have any idea what that means? It's a great line, but I don't know what that really means.
I don't know. I guess maybe he's suggesting that McClane's a bit of an asshole too and just has that same kind of tough. Yeah, I guess he's meaning it as more of a bit of a tough, no-nonsense kind of thing. And I think he's just trying to say that he's on the same page. I guess that's why I read it.
Okay. All right, makes sense. We're very similar. You know, we get along better than you would think. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then we get a shot of all of Grant's men moving forward. We can actually count 9 of them, you know, walking through or crouching through to get through the perimeter. And I mean, they give us some nice shots of it. But again, it, you know, it goes back to what we were saying earlier in the week. It looks like terrorists are about to try and take over the church, you know, even though they already have. But, you know, the fact that they're all in ski masks, balaclavas, you know, and then one of them sets off a tripwire. Now, it's very hard to tell because it happens so quickly. Does it look like that happens on purpose? You know, is it like his gun accidentally flips the tripwire, or is it a knife that looks like it's cutting the tripwire?
I don't think it's a knife. It looks like it's... It does have an almost deliberate movement. Where you see where they're standing, it seems like an odd place. Wherever they're standing, all seems like an odd place to put a tripwire, to be honest.
That's correct.
Like they're all stood by that fence. It seems a really weird place to put the tripwire.
Yes.
But, yeah.
But it really looks as if, you know, okay, first of all, if you do it in slow motion, you can tell that it is his gun that's doing it, but he basically lifts up his gun. And as he's lifting up the gun, he sets off the tripwire. So again, I mean, you'd think that these guys are a little more professional in what they're doing, that they should be looking for these type of tripwires. And, you know, you need to have a little better discipline with your gun besides letting it just swing up that way, that you're going to, you know, set off this type of tripwire. Yeah, I don't know. Mm. Do you know what a tripwire is? Like the official term of a tripwire?
Official term? Oh, I just thought they were always called tripwire, but no, I don't know.
So it is a passive triggering mechanism, typically a wire or a cord that is attached to a device for detecting or reacting to physical movement. In the military, these are things that are connected to generally mines, either fragmentation mines, sometimes it could be with grenades and stuff like that, sometimes different types of booby traps. You know, that if you tug on the wire, you release the tension on it, so it will trigger the explosives. Usually, you're supposed to check beforehand about this. They say that there are places where soldiers will use silly string in order to, they will spray silly string in certain areas to try and see if there are tripwires and stuff like that. Because if it lands on the ground, then it won't set off any of those. I never would have thought of doing something like that. It's pretty ingenious if you think about it.
That is clever. I guess it's like it's the equivalent of in the movies when they've got those kind of laser grids. They always use like, I know, hairspray and all that, don't they? It's kind of the equivalent of doing that, but more
Right. That's right.
difficult.
Where they spray the hairspray and then you see the red lines and
Yeah,
stuff
see
like
the
that.
red. Yeah.
Yeah, those are in heist movies usually. Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea was actually thought of only 3 years after this movie came out, by a sergeant who was the chief instructor of the U.S. Army Sapper Course, named David Chandler, and he thought about the idea of using silly string, and they started using it later on in Iraq for the same purpose.
Wow. I love the idea of soldiers in Iraq running around with silly string in their pockets. It's brilliant.
That's right. Hey, why not? If it does the job, so
Yeah.
I don't know if you really can complain about that.
Would they have army issue like cool looking silly string, or would they just buy some of the kind of joke shop stuff? That's the question.
Right, that's right. Now, tripwires also have emergency have industrial applications. Sometimes the type of tripwire could be used on a conveyor belt, which will enable the workers to stop the equipment quickly. It can also be known as an emergency stop pull cord. Maybe you have them on trains and stuff like that, or buses where you pull the cord and stuff like that. But the idea that that's also still called a tripwire is very interesting. What I found out here is even stranger, a tripwire is also the use of a small force deployment, meaning that you send a small group in beforehand to check things out before you send in, the full brunt of your unit and stuff like that. Which I just found really interesting, the idea. It's also known as
Yeah,
a
that's
glass
weird.
plate. It's a strategic approach in deterrence theory. The tripwire force is a military force smaller than that of a potential adversary, which is designed to signal the defending side's commitment to an armed response to further aggression without triggering a security spiral. I guess that means that basically you send in a small group to see if they're going to fight, if they're going to start shooting at them. And if they shoot at them, they're like, oh, okay. So I guess these people really do want to have a fight. That's the way it sounds. So, yeah, I don't know. It's this movie, I mean, we're gonna see it over the next see it mostly next week also, but that there is a lot of use of a whole bunch of different tripwires and light flashing lights and stuff like that to make it seem as if things are a little bit more more important than they really are about what's going on. I think it I guess just
Yeah, again.
to make us believe that there's more going on than there really is.
Yeah, I guess so. I think you might have, you've probably already talked about this in a much earlier episode, but I think speaking of making things look flashier and things, the supposedly the air traffic control room, that when they went to look at a real air traffic control room, it was too boring, so they just totally made up their own one, which is nothing like an actual one,
Makes
just to
sense.
make it look cooler.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after he sets off the tripwire, we're shown a little box, which is just very funny the way that the box is. It says track to follow, and then you have a thing that says quadrant, and then you have four different lights, one, two, three, and four. And then there's like a keypad with a red and blue button, which you'd think would be a green one, but okay. And then we see like a flashing light happen in quadrant two. So I guess that side of the building is quadrant two.
Yeah.
So it's just very, very interesting the way that happens. And then we get a passing shot of everyone, of the bad guys that are left are planning something, they're getting ready. We have Stuart scream out, Garber, sit report, situation report. And because they hear the fact that the tripwire has gone off. And then Garber, who's up in the bell tower, looks over and says, Army Special Forces on three sides, closing in fast around the back. So, first of all, how does he know these are Army Special Forces? Because of their masks? No, like, how do you
Yeah,
know it's the
because
Army
well,
Special
yeah.
Forces as opposed to it's the SWAT team or it's the FBI or, you know, it could have been, we talked a few weeks ago about all the different possibilities of who deals with hostage situations or these type of situations. And, you know, it's just very strange that he would automatically say Army Special Forces unless maybe Garber knows that this is what we're dealing with. This is part of the plan.
Well, you'd have thought they would. Well, they definitely know it's part of the plan because they changed the bullets. So, I'd have, wouldn't they all know that it's part of the plan? That's why it doesn't quite make sense. Wouldn't they just say, "Oh, all right, let's go," unless they're worried that some of the people not in on it are around. I don't know.
Well, we know that Telford is not in on the plan, and therefore
Yeah,
that's
that's
why,
true.
you know. So but he's the only guy who doesn't use a gun, so he doesn't need to deal with switching his clips. So okay, maybe. And then we get John Guguziano running across from the background, running back and forth. And then I love this line from Esperanza. Esperanza turns to him and goes, "Another problem, Colonel," meaning "Another thing you didn't plan for?" And he goes, "No problem, General." And then he looks around and goes, "Gentlemen, you know what to do." And then we see them all, you know, switch out the red clips for the blue clips. So we see a shot of Miller and Burke. They're both getting ready. We see Connor, who's also getting ready. You know, it's just very weird and strange the way that they do this whole thing. But you know what to do, and gentlemen, we have a situation. You know, they're like code phrases to say, okay, this is what I'm going to say to switch to, you know, the blue ones instead of the red ones. Why doesn't he just say switch to the blue ammo? Mean, I know why he doesn't do that, because that would sort of negate the surprise in the movie if you were to do something like that.
Although it's still very clear that they're changing the ammo and they make it very clear, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it just sounds cooler.
Yeah, of course. That's true. And also the fact that Garber says that they're closing in on three sides, we saw them all on one side before. So how did they get to the other two sides already? You know, they must
Oh
have
yeah,
fanned
very
out
true.
in some way.
Yeah, it's not a huge building. I guess it wouldn't take long to spin round.
Right.
But yeah.
So again, this goes back to the idea of what we talked about earlier in the week, that Esperanza does not know the full plan. You know,
Which seems
and
weird.
yes. Well, it seems weird on the one hand, but on the other hand, okay, Stewart's keeping it to himself. You know, and we had it in
Yeah.
the first movie also. Hans didn't tell everybody what's going on.
No. Well, you'd guess. Yeah, I don't know. Of anyone they could tell, you'd have thought he would tell him, because it's all to save his life and get him out of there, sort of thing, to do the job. But yeah, it is odd.
But when would he have told him? When would he have had time to tell him? When they're
Oh
driving,
well, they've just
when they're
been sat
driving.
around tending to his wounds and things. I don't know. They've been in the church a while.
No, but maybe he likes the fact that he can surprise Esperanza that there's more to what's going on here than meets the eye.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I guess it makes him look, yeah, more slicker. So true.
No, it's you know, maybe Esperanza will give them more money for what they're doing if you know, if he doesn't see how complex everything is at the beginning. And then now that he does, you guys deserve an extra 200K. Here you go.
Yeah, he might hire them back wherever he gets to as his fellow, his kind of in-house mercenaries.
Right. That's true. That's true. And then we get a shot of Burke running towards like the window, and like underneath the windowsill, there's I guess some sort of desk or something like that, and he just like smashes everything off that's there and throws it onto the floor, and then as he's doing that, he then starts to break the glass, and then just shoots out into the crowd, not really aiming or anything like that, and then John and Barnes both jump for cover. You know, to try and make sure that you know, they don't get hit by any stray bullets or anything like that. And you know, it's actually funny the way that they, I mean, if you did you see how John like looks as he's jumping down? You know, it just looks very, very funny the way that he does it. You know, so
yeah. Seem a bit overly.
No, and also everyone else crouches down, and John jumps to the right.
Yeah,
you know, that type of thing. Now, did you notice? I didn't mention this before. When Khan puts in his clip, you see him like spin it around in his hand, which was a very cool move by him.
Yeah.
This is an actor named Tom Verrico. We talked about him a little earlier this season. I actually just watched one of my favorite miniseries, if not my favorite miniseries, From the Earth to the Moon, which he plays a prominent role in it. He plays Dick Gordon, who's in a number of the episodes. He was one of the astronauts. So I just love seeing him in this movie because of that. You know, just, even though he has almost nothing to say and nothing to do, but you know, and here in this scene, he takes it and just spins around, spins the clip in his hand, which you wouldn't normally do. And then we see Garber up in the bell tower, breaking the windows and start shooting out, from the windows in the bell tower, which once again is further proof that this probably was not shot in the actual church that we talked about earlier this week. That would be my guess. I don't know.
I guess if you look out the window as well, it's suspiciously plain and
well, it's because of the massive fake snowstorm going on. Come on.
Yeah, true.
You gotta watch out for those. And we see Khan setting all these different charges in the church, and a lot of little like flashing lights on all the things. You know, he like flips a little switch and you have the red. Actually, you know what this reminds me of? This is must be a Rennie Harlan thing, because assuming you've seen Cliffhanger, right?
Yes.
So it's a similar type of thing with what Gabe uses there when they try to hide, one of the stacks of money, with these different rabbits.
Oh yeah.
So it has a similar thing with these two red blinking lights.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
although it's this the kind of, well, not always with the two, but I was going to say every 80s, 90s action movie has to have some kind of light flashing time bomb sort of thing going on.
Of course. I mean, that's a requirement for the genre. I wouldn't have it any other way. But I just think it's really funny that it looks very similar to what you have in Cliffhanger.
Similar, yeah, yeah.
That, Rennie Harlan will go make just 3 years from now. And then we get all this shooting back and forth. Now, did you notice how many windows they break here? It actually is really funny because we see them break 5 windows.
Right.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
But how many men do they still have left? Okay. John has killed 8.
Yeah.
Okay, Baker was number 8. So that means that there are 4 left plus Esperanza. So there's 5 guys. Esperanza and Stewart are not shooting. So you have 3 guys that are shooting.
No.
Okay, you are actually... So something's wrong here.
Well, they're just running around shooting multiple windows very quickly, moving between them.
Yes.
Oh, there's 2 at once there. Though. Oh, no, they're all... Yeah, although the way it cuts it is though there's... Yeah, there's a bit where you see 4... different broken windows all in the space of a second.
That's right. And that's the funny thing, because it really does look like, and again, we have Khan is not doing this. So, you have 2 people that break the same 2 windows, one next to the other, which I have a feeling that that's like right above where Baker is dead. Baker's dead body is on the ground there. Don't you think they'd be concerned of where Baker is?
Well, I guess they're used to cannon fodder. They're used to casualties, especially by now in the film.
Seriously. And then there's a lot of shooting back and forth between the two sides. And then we get another shot of Miller, who's breaking another window. So now we're up to 6 windows that are broken. And we can see off to his right side, we see, the system that we talked about earlier, which showed that the tripwire on, in quadrant 2 went off, that type of thing. And they basically seem as if they're shooting wildly. in every direction. And we get Miller doing that also. Miller stands in front of the window and is shooting all around.
Although I guess that is the point. I guess this it's all part of it. Does fit into the twist that they're not killing each other. They're just doing it for show for McClane and the cops, whoever else is
there. Yeah, but to stand there and know that take the risk that someone didn't switch their clip to something else, or maybe John's going to be shooting.
Oh well, maybe that's why they're shooting wildly and not aiming.
could be. And then, Miller is very intense with what he's doing there. No question about that. And then we see Grant, show up right near John, not too far away from him. And we see him pull out his pistol, and he's getting ready to shoot as the minute ends.
Does his pistol have real bullets?
We didn't see him put in a blue clip. So I don't know.
No, he doesn't have his little colored things.
That's right. Don't know. Well, on a pistol, it wouldn't be effective unless you put it on the bottom. You know, on the bottom part of the clip when you're putting that would make a little more sense. Exactly. So I don't know. Yeah. So you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script, Dave?
No, I think we've covered the things I was going to talk about.
Okay. All right. So the script continues from yesterday about McClane saying that he was wrong. And then Grant says, lightening John up. He says, no, you're right. I'm just your kind of guy. And this is McClane and Barnes watch as the soldiers start to close the net. A soldier moves forward on the lawn into a prone firing position, and then his gun muzzle hits a tripwire in the snow. Stewart's men react to the alarm, instantly going to their assigned jobs. Some grab weapons. Others smash the equipment. Esperanza bandage, throws a coat on and grabs a pistol. McClane screams, oh, shit. Everyone dives for cover as the stained glass window is broken and a rifle pokes out. Gunfire lights up the street, reflects on the snow. Then Stewart says, gentlemen, you know what to do. And then it says, looks all around, all change their ammo clips, putting ones with blue adhesive tape on their weapons. And then they retreat from the front windows. We pan them out. We pan them out the rear and to the fence behind the church, which they smash through. So according to the script, they just run away. They don't even start really shooting. I like the fact that they have this pretend firefight going on. You know, it tries to help make things feel more plausible. That's what I would think. So every Thursday we have a segment called Aviation Thursday, where my guests will give their top five movies that deal with aviation, whether it's a plane, whether it's a spacecraft, or possibly being in an airport or something like that. So, David, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Okay, cool. There are a lot to pick from here. And my number five, I've gone a bit. There are probably films that are a little better than this, but I feel it's underrated. So I wanted to stick it in the list. And that's Passenger 57.
Don't worry. Jeanette put it on her list.
Nice. It's just a solid, decent kind of 90s action movie. Wesley Snipes is always there. It's always good fun to watch, and I just really enjoy it. I think it's underrated. Number four is Con Air, which has been well covered on another podcast, which many...
Not anymore. They're done.
Well, John, yeah, true, but, they, you know, it's, but the podcast is still there.
Jay and Mark, that's right. The Con Air pod is still out there. They've been done for, I guess, about 3 months now.
Yeah.
So, it was a great run listening to 40 chapters of Con Air. You can go and find that on Con Air Pod.
Yeah, and
great job, guys.
Yeah, and I guested on that and kind of showing my love for that film. I enjoy that film. Great, great deal. It's stupid, but it's fun. And then number three, I've gone back to an old classic and Flight of the Phoenix, the 1965 version. The remake's okay, but it's not a patch on the original. It's just a great, great film, really. A great kind of character movie, really strong characters, really gripping story, and it's just fantastic. It's a great, great film. Number two, I've gone with United 93, which is just an incredibly tense watch. Very powerful film, incredibly gripping. It's one of those films that it's one of these. It got a lot of acclaim when it came out, but it took me a while to get around to watching it. And when I finally did, it was just, it really blew me away. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. But there's one film.
I actually saw it on opening day. Wow. It was a movie that I anticipated for such a long time, through today, it is still one of my all-time favorite movies.
So good.
I've seen it more times than most people have, than most sane people would watch it, because it's so amazing in my eyes.
Yeah.
I think I've seen it like 8 or 9 times.
Well, I've still only seen it once, but it had such an impact. It is an absolutely fantastic film. But there's one airplane movie to rule them all for me, and that is Airplane. I just adore Airplane. It's so funny. It's one of my favorite comedies, endlessly quotable and just insanely enjoyable. And as fantastic as United 93 is, Airplane just will have a special place in my heart. So I had to take the number one spot.
Okay, that's fair. You are allowed to do that. I will allow you to do that. So, David, you want to once again tell people where they can find David Brook?
Yeah, I write all my reviews over at blueprintreview.co.uk, and you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and all that kind of jazz.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, David, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to finish off the week?
Absolutely.
All right. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages,